Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Let's Talk Parks. Thanks for joining us today. We are talking about fresh ideas to recruit quality seasonal employees. We know that this is a really timely topic right now as lifeguard shortages and camp counselor shortages and recreation cashier shortages are really something that everyone is facing around the country. And so we wanted to come at you with some fresh ideas and some new perspectives and simple things that you can do to really get people interested and excited about your jobs. And on this episode, Marissa and I really dive into some of those ideas, and Marissa shares stories from when she was a lifeguard and what kept her there, and really some reframing around what we can do today. So real quickly, if you are new here, welcome. And if you're a longtime listener, welcome back. Let's Talk Parks is a podcast where we share the stories of purpose-driven parks and recreation professionals who are committed to challenging organizational norms and raising the bar in the field. We are an evolving resource to not only educate, but also to inspire up-and-coming park and recreation professionals to raise the bar in the field so that they can make a positive difference in their communities. A quick note on all of this stuff that we're talking about in this episode. We have a blog post over on letstalkparks.com, which will be linked in the show notes, that you can just easily access all of that as well. So hope you all enjoy this episode. And until next time, let's talk parks. All right. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Let's Talk Parks. In this episode, Marissa and Becky hop on the mic to talk about some fresh ideas to recruit seasonal employees. Because in this field, you probably are aware that there is a national lifeguard shortage. And so we're here to address that, to sympathize with you, and to give you some ideas. So Marissa, just like overall, I know you're more active in kind of the Facebook groups. What have you been hearing about this?
It has been, I mean, I feel like the past, maybe 5 years, it has been especially relevant or really out there and obvious for all of us in the field of parks and recreation that for some reason we are just struggling to get camp counselors and lifeguards and any seasonal staff. And I reflect back on my lifeguarding days and how much fun it was. And I always ask myself, why do people have such a hard time recruiting summer staff? But I mean, it comes down to a lot of the things that we're going to talk about in today's episode. So it has been something that people talk about on the Women in Parks and Recreation Facebook page. I took a quick little poll the other day to see if people are really struggling. And it does seem like the majority of our followers and listeners are still struggling to find that summer staff. And I think it's a trend that's been going on, like I said, for years. So we just wanted to hop on today, give you a couple tips and tricks to get those summer staff on your team.
Exactly. And just to continue on with what Marissa was saying, if you just Google lifeguard shortage 2021, there's like 10 or so videos just within the last week of news outlets covering this, because it's impacting cities and pools and beaches, and it's having this wide reaching effect. And in those videos that I was watching, I heard about Mecklenburg County was a great example of an agency that had 250 positions that need to fill. And I think at this point they had only filled 86, and we're going into Memorial Day weekend. And obviously that means that they can't open all of their facilities. So to incentivize workers, they raised their hourly rate to $15 an hour, which is great. It seems like more of a living wage. I know a lot of agencies aren't able to do that, but the kicker is they also offered a $500 signing bonus for lifeguards.
That is insane. So my experience just is that typically when we've been trying to recruit lifeguards, like there was one summer that I was at Lake Bluff and we were talking about getting more lifeguards on our team. We offered a $150 bonus to come on and stay on. So you got your bonus at the end of the season. You did have to make it through the entire season, but you got $150 at the end of the season. And we also had incentives for people who recruited other people. And I feel like that's still very relevant in almost all positions. There's always a referral incentive. You've got good employees who can then go and recruit their friends and get other good employees. But for me, it doesn't really come down to pay. I know that back when I was a lifeguard, I made $8 an hour. And none of us really cared. So, I'm sure we'll talk about this a little bit later in the episode, but just that a lot of it comes down to making sure that the current lifeguards that you have an excellent experience so that they then go and recruit their friends, their siblings. Because I can tell you right now that my sister first worked at the pool. She was a manager at the pool and she got me to come lifeguard. And then a couple summers later, she got my younger sister to come work with the pool staff. She wasn't a lifeguard, but she did like the concession stand and all of that. So it does trickle down because then I recruited a bunch of my friends to come work and my boyfriend and all of his friends. And so it is a ripple effect. So we'll talk about that a little bit later in the episode, but I'm sure a lot of people focus on increasing pay, but to me, it's not just all about the pay.
Right, exactly. It's kind of like making a whole well-rounded experience that people want to share. They want to come back year after year, so you're keeping those quality employees over time. But just to kind of before we get into some of these strategies, let's talk about the reason for these shortages. And of course, we don't, there's part of us that's just like we don't know, right? And there's some things that are, of course, beyond our control. Your budget has a lot to do with it, I'm sure. But with COVID-19, I think what I was learning in this research for this episode is that a lot of our seasonal employees, they lost their job or were fired or let go from these seasonal roles. They just weren't deemed essential at the time. And last year, if pools didn't open or you had reduced operations, a lot of those employees that you might have had for years moved on to different opportunities. And so maybe they've moved on entirely. And so you feel like you're having to start fresh this year. And in addition to that, a lot of the trainings and the onboarding preparation season, I'm sure, was very confusing and delayed, frankly, because people didn't know if they were going to be able to reopen, when they were going to be able to reopen. A lot of these new mask or taking away the mask mandate, I should say, changed things, changed operations. And so professionals kind of had to act very quickly. And so they didn't have the time to effectively onboard and get people in. And then the last point, which we will talk about other strategies, but just that park districts and many cities aren't able to pay competitive wages. And so people are always looking for what's going to be best for them, whether it is pay or experience or relationships. And so there's a lot of different factors at play. So knowing that we're not going to be able to address your exact concerns, we do hope that this episode will give you some inspiration to go out and recruit more quality seasonal employees this year. Cool. Well, let's get into it. So the first one is about understanding your employee motivations. And Marissa, you were just talking about this, how it seems like back in the day, right? Like becoming a lifeguard was like a social symbol. Like it was a real thing.
For sure. I remember, like I said, my sister had been a pool manager and she recruited me to come work. I then recruited a couple of my best friends and then they recruited their friends who played on the volleyball team and basketball team with them. I recruited my boyfriend who lived several towns over. And he then recruited like six of his friends and his brother's friends. So it became this giant ripple effect. And so maybe because I was kind of at the bottom of the food chain, I didn't realize the struggles that maybe they were having at the top, maybe we did need more lifeguards. But it was, I would say that it was very intimidating, and I think that it still is. When I talk to teenagers or college students, and I encourage them to get into lifeguarding or to get into camp jobs and things like that, to really get into parks and recreation, typically they steer away from lifeguarding. They know that it is a hard, serious job. You are not just playing games all day. You are making sure that people live, and you have to know life-saving skills. And it's physically hard. I mean, for those of you who work in aquatics or have ever been a lifeguard, I mean, swimming the 5 million laps that they make you swim, then getting the brick from the bottom of the pool, then treading water for 2 minutes with your hands up, doing all of the rescues in a 12-foot pool. I mean, it is exhausting. So I think that you do have to kind of dress it up a little bit. You're having fun with your friends during the summer. I was really fortunate during my time lifeguarding that I was able to lifeguard with all of my friends. I mean, like I said, there was so many of us that we had teams back then. We were put on teams of six. So, you know, regardless of what our management staff tried to do to split us all up, they weren't going to be able to divide and conquer all of us. So I did get to lifeguard with a lot of my friends. So that made this completely different experience. And we had such an amazing summer, and more than one summer. I mean, I lifeguarded 5 summers because it was just the best job ever. And I came home during my breaks at college, and I did it through high school. So it was one of the most rewarding experiences. And I think that we don't sell that enough. I do think that part of it is how much we pay. Like when I was at Lake Bluff the other summer, one of the lifeguards told me that he was leaving to go to one of the Froyo shops where he was going to be making $15 an hour. So yes, you know, depending on the area you're in and what is driving your staff. I mean, I was really lucky. Lake Bluff is a very affluent area. So those kids were not lifeguarding because they needed the money. They were lifeguarding because they wanted to spend the summer with their friends. So, and most of them were swim team kids or water polo kids. So they already enjoyed being in the water. So, but I did lose a couple staff to positions like that, to Froyo shops.
Exactly. Like, I mean, if it's higher pay and they still get to hang out with their friends and it's indoors and air conditioned, I mean, some people are just going to pick that.
And they don't have to save anyone's life. So
exactly. A little bit less pressure.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But like knowing their motivations for why they want to be in that job and what's going to keep them there is critical. So one way that you can figure out what their motivations are is just to ask your current employees or those ones that keep coming back year after year, you know, why do you stay here? What do you enjoy working about here? What would you like to get out of this job? And then by understanding what brought them to apply in the first place and what keeps them there, then you can kind of use that same language, that same verbiage to motivate others in that recruitment process.
For sure. And I don't think we ask our staff enough why they enjoy working for us. So do it with your part-time staff now. Like, why do you come back every day? You know, what is bringing you back here?
Exactly. And on the flip side, if you have a high turnover rate and you have employees that are consistently leaving you, then that's an opportunity to give them a call and say, or in their exit interview, you know, why are you leaving? What could we have done better? What could we have done different to understand kind of that missing link? Because chances are you're going to see some sort of trend. And even if you can't fix it all, at least you have those data points. But you know, when you're just guessing, you're just going to constantly spin your wheels because you don't have anything to go off of. So, understanding and asking your employees is really the first step to understanding their motivations. The second thing that we were going to talk about is like building excitement for this because, and it builds on the motivations, right? But we, similar to what Marissa was just saying, is that a lot of times in the application process and how it's presented, whether online or when you're talking to someone, you know, you talk about the responsibilities, talk about the qualifications that you need and all the training that you need. You focus on, you know, the $10 an hour wage, like you give them all of the facts, but you're not sharing the excitement for working in your agency. And if you don't have some of those great benefits that maybe other competing agencies or competing businesses may have, then you have to be really creative in how you present the opportunity. I've seen a lot of different agencies have these news stories. That's what I was just talking about earlier, is all these videos that are popping up that are news stories about small agents, small and large agencies that are not able to fill those positions. And so maybe you can find a way to get your story out in a media outlet, or, you know, through social media. But there has to be a way to build that excitement outside of just apply for this job. A lot of times I think we miss the mark.
One of the things that I really like that several agencies in our area have done this spring is that they have gone on social media, and what they've done is they've interviewed past staff. So they've interviewed the high school science teacher. They've interviewed people who are now, you know, way out of college, who talk about their experience lifeguarding that summer and how it brought them to be a doctor or a nurse, or like I said, a high school science teacher, or whatever it might be, a graphic designer. You know, it maybe those skills don't necessarily translate into what their future is going to be, but they definitely had a foundation for having some of these critical thinking skills and, you know, things like that that helped them when they got into college and then interviewed later on. I personally feel that lifeguarding is one of the things that, like, yes, I'm probably going to force my kids to do. They're going to lifeguard, they're going to waitress or waiter, and they're going to work retail, because I feel like those are three things that everyone kind of needs to experience to be good professionals later on, you know, to have kind of that thick skin and know some of those life skills. But like I said, one of those things that I think our area did really well this summer was doing those Instagram stories and those Facebook posts about, like I said, interviewing past staff. And if Wheeling Park District, wink, wink, ever came to me and said, hey, Marissa, would you do one of those about your amazing experience at the Wheeling Park District? For sure, I would do it. So, and I think you can feel the energy in those videos, how people were so excited to work for that agency. And they just explain how lifeguarding isn't so scary. You know, there is a lot of pride that comes with it. I mean, you are learning life-saving skills that, like I said, will carry you for the rest of your life. So I think that we, like you said, we post these jobs. We say we need lifeguards. We say we need camp staff. But we don't talk about, like, okay, what are you going to get out of this? You know, right. I need a lifeguard, but what am I going to give you? What am I going to do for you? I'm going to give you the best 5 summers of your life, a tan that you'll never forget, some experiences, and it's just the most amazing experience. It doesn't feel like a job when you're doing it, and I really wish we did a little bit more to sell that.
Yes, I love it. I love it. Okay, and what you're just talking about, going on social media, going where they are, is really the third tip that I want to bring up, is around a lot of the ideas around how to recruit and advertise for these positions are still very outdated. And I think there are so many of you out there that are raising the bar when it comes to this. You're trying out new strategies, you're doing videos, but I still see the flyers, you know, packed with information. I'm like, where are you putting that? I can't read it on my phone. Your facility isn't open right now. Who is reading these, and is it really working for you? So I think now is a great time to revisit this, make everything mobile friendly, and go where they are. You know, I saw somebody, it was in a Facebook group about, you know, well, we've been trying to target these lifeguards, and we even did Facebook ads. And I'm thinking, you know, if you're trying to target potential candidates between the ages of 16 and 20, you know, I don't think they're on Facebook. They're not on Facebook.
No, they're not. I actually had a group of high schoolers tell me a couple weeks ago, we had a meeting with a group of kids from Mundelein High School who were actually trying, they created an app for us Parks and Rec folk called Who's Next? what's up next? Who's next? I don't know. I'm not cool and hip enough to remember. But they created this app to reserve courts, like tennis courts, basketball courts, things like that, so that your friends can also see who's coming to play. And so we were just kind of picking their brains, like, so where are you guys looking and things like that. And when I got on and was like, yeah, I'm really cool. I'm on Facebook and Instagram. They were like, Marissa, no, Facebook is not cool anymore. You need to get on TikTok and Snapchat. And yeah, Instagram is kind of still there, but no, we're not going on Facebook. Our moms are on Facebook. So if you want to get their attention, go ahead and post something. But if you want to get our attention, we're not on Facebook. Sorry, lady.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So go where they are. And it's not a bad idea to go through the parents, right? Because how many times did your parents tell you, you need to find a job this summer, you need to do something this summer? They might be the ones that end up connecting you with your future employees. So if you are going after the parents, maybe Facebook is the way to go. Maybe you can, you know, utilize some Google ads, or you can use your email newsletter. Like, be creative in the way that you approach your audience, and just know that your messaging to parents should be different from messaging to the kids, and same with the platform. So just wanted to keep that in mind, that you need to go where they are and stop expecting them to come to you.
Yes. No more job fairs. Every time our HR sends me a thing, or all of us, a little email saying, hey, the Mundelein High School is having a job fair, who wants to go? I'm like, no, hard pass. Been there, done that. Don't get any employees from it. So yes, do I enjoy spending a couple hours at the high school chit-chatting with the cool kids? For sure. But do I really ever get anyone? Not really. So yes, we need to go to them instead of asking them to come to us.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's talk about what, let's say that you have completely reimagined the way that you're reaching out to these potential candidates, and you're building the hype, and now you've got them on the hook. They're interested, they're excited about it, and they go to your website to fill out an application. I think this is where so many people get stuck, is that they are completely outdated. They're not mobile friendly. I still see some, not a lot, but some paper applications, which makes me cringe, as if people have printers, as if people are going to send their application in the mail or drop it off. Just put yourself in the shoes of a 16-year-old teenager and think, like, if that's the hurdle that you want me to go through, I'm not interested.
And I think that's why we get so many parents also applying for these positions for their kids. And I feel like that could be a whole episode in itself, is the struggle of parents getting involved in the hiring process. But yes, if we have this archaic way of making teenagers apply, mom and dad might have to get involved so that they can bring out the typewriter to fill out your application for you. So, I mean, think about it. A lot of these kids have not so great handwriting. They didn't learn penmanship like most of us. And again, like, most of their life has been on their cell phone. Computers haven't even really been a huge part of their lives. So we do need to make things mobile friendly, or maybe it's an app, something that you can quickly go on your phone and apply. So we have to make it so that it adapts to them, instead of, like we've been saying this whole time, making them adapt to us and what works best for us. If we want those staff, we kind of have to bend and do a little bit to meet their needs.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think in my experience, I've heard people say, like, well, it's, they have to be able to fill out the application completely, or else we're not even interested. Like, it shows that they're not interested in this job if they don't do it this thoroughly. And I think that's really not the best approach. I get where that mindset's coming from, but when you are the one that's desperate for employees, you have to rethink it and just make it as easy as possible. So using, a system like governmentjobs.com, like, I know it's expensive to link all that up and to post jobs on that site, but it allows your candidates to save their resume and save previous application and it's all in one place. So it makes it really easy for them to do it. Because I remember applying for jobs where I would spend hours on a cover letter, on applying through these like archaic systems, and then never heard back. We'll get to that. But it's just those systems don't work for us. So really we have to find a way to make it more user-friendly.
Well, and I think we also need to give a little bit of grace. Keep in mind, for many of these employees, this is their very first job. This mm-hmm. may be the very first job they've ever applied for. So yes, those incomplete applications or ones where they might have checked the wrong thing or put their name in the wrong spot, give them some grace. Still bring them in for an interview. Give them a chance. I know I have had some bad employees because I have gone out on a whim and given them a chance and figured, okay, maybe it's just, you know, the application. Maybe this is their first time. But I've also had some really knock out of the park, amazing employees, high school kids who did not do stellar at the application process, but they blew my socks off once they were on board. So please keep in mind that for many of these kids, it is their first job. It is, like I said, we are here to give them their first experience. And we need to make sure that we give them a great first experience.
Exactly. And I think part of making that great first experience is making sure that communication is really strong too, so that when someone does apply, that maybe you have an auto email system that says, you know, thank you, we received it. Like, modify that to say, thank you so much. We are so excited for you to be, for your interest. We will get back with you within a few days, a reasonable time frame, and then actually follow up. Because I think a lot of times that's a missing link. It's because people get so busy and they don't want to look through the entire list of applicants, and they're looking for names that they know in the list. And so I get that, but when people spend the time to fill out those applications, the least you can do is at least let them know that they're not the best fit for what you need right now. If they really aren't qualified, or follow up and speed up the onboarding and training process. So we'll go to that one next as we kind of go through this list, but I think, especially in local government, we've got so many systems that aren't efficient. And so in my experience, both hiring and being on the other side of it, is that a lot of times it can take, you know, 4 to 8 weeks between applying and hearing back and interviewing and then filling out paperwork, you know, doing all of the HR stuff. And then finally you get into training, and that is so long. One of the things, if you listen to the episode with Angela Summers, which was just a couple weeks ago, is called a must listen, because I wanted everyone to listen to that. But she talked about how in Henderson, Nevada, they have a version of a career fair where they come, like candidates come, they apply, they interview, they do their drug test on site. They do everything that they would need. And then they find out that they got the job or they didn't on site. I know it's like, it's a crazy idea that all of that can happen in a couple hours, but I mean, imagine the amount of excitement that you build. And then they get to walk out knowing that they have that job instead of being at home, you know, wondering for weeks on end.
And being one of those people who has been in those shoes, I'm pretty sure with my experience at Wheeling, you know, they had everyone apply in like January, and we didn't have interviews or anything. We didn't even hear anything till like March. And so yes, for a while you're sitting around wondering, like, are they gonna call me? Like, do I start applying for other jobs? Like, what's going on here? And yes, it was one of my first experiences reaching out to the interviewer, the place that I was applying to, and saying like, hey, what's going on? But that is something that we've really been trying to emphasize at our park district the past couple of weeks, is getting back to those applicants, making sure that they know that you've received their application, you're reviewing it, what the timeline is. Yes, we plan to review applications within the next 2 weeks. You know, maybe it's not necessarily within days, but yes, you know, we plan to have this reviewed within the next 2 or 3 weeks. This is the process for hiring. You will go through, you know, if selected, you will go through an interview, then there will be this amount of training, and then there will be, you know, drug tests and all of that. And that way they have a good picture and an idea of, do they really want this job? When my sister recruited me to be a lifeguard, I had no idea what I was in store for. Like, it was just insane. You know, you spend 4 days, you know, training in a pool when it's 40 degrees outside and you come home with blue lips. I mean, but had someone, I mean, maybe it would have intimidated me and I wouldn't have gone for a lifeguarding job, but just giving, I'm the kind of person who needs to know what to expect. So I really like that lately our agency has been really focused on making sure that we get back to those who have applied. We don't just ghost them. We don't leave them waiting and wondering. If it helps you, set a reminder in your calendar to reach out to those people. You know, every Friday you're going to send an email, even if it's kind of just a big blanket email to everyone. Make time for it, schedule it, make sure that it's a priority. You know, we have lots of priorities. We have, you know, urgent versus important. These are, you know, some of the most important things. You need those staff to open up your pool or your camps or whatever it is. So make sure that it is on your calendar and that you take time to pay attention to the interview process and the hiring process.
Exactly. And you never know if those employees that had applied could be your next aquatics manager or recreation supervisor or executive director 10, 15 years down the line. But I think employees really want to know, I think especially in our generation, they want to know that you have an efficient and effective system for communicating and for it, because you're really foreshadowing the rest of the experience, the way that you communicate, even in the application and interview process. And so they're going to learn what to expect throughout training and the rest of the summer if you can really kick this off in a strong way. Okay, so let's say that you're going to speed up the onboarding and training process. The other note on that is if you do have some way of doing like an online training system or just some way to onboard them in an effective way that's really going to help. There's a lot of different ways to go into that. We're not going to cover that today, but something to consider. So let's say that you now have this new training process. Let's talk about some of the current policies that may be a red flag for new employees ages 16 through 20 or above and beyond. I'll give you an example. Although I wasn't a direct manager of a pool, I was at a recreation center, and when we kind of did a hybrid approach, like when the pools opened, then I would a couple days a week go over to the pools and manage things. And one summer we decided, you know what, enough with those darn phones. I'm tired of seeing the phones, you know, lifeguards shouldn't be able to access those. And we just got such backlash from that. And I totally get it. And just imagine from your own point of view, being told that you can't have your phone for a 6-hour shift. Like, that's nuts. Like, we are so used to having it constantly by our side that, like, that's just one example of a policy that I don't think works anymore.
Oh, totally agree. So I can remember back when I lifeguarded and cell phones were kind of a new thing. This was like 2003. And I remember that we were told we had to leave our cell phones in our lockers. And at that time, it wasn't as big of a deal because, yeah, we just used our cell phones to text our friends quick, let them know what we were doing, make plans for the night. But now think about it. Your cell phone is like your right arm. I mean, I literally, when I leave the house and forget my cell phone, I turn back around and go get it because it is like my baby. I cannot spend the day without my cell phone because I'm constantly connected to people. So yes, I do think that some of our policies keep people from wanting to work for us, whether it be cell phones. And I get it. I've been hard on staff before about cell phones, especially when they're in a customer service position. But maybe we can, like I said, keep your cell phones in your lockers. You're allowed to check them during rotations and on your downtime. I think some policies on like social media use, that might kind of hinder. I get that from a legal standpoint, we kind of have to, you know, keep things filtered, I guess, or censored. But then also just like, again, back to using your cell phone, like taking pictures while you're at work. I know that a lot of staff who, you know, they want to take selfies, they want to take pictures of the pool, things like that. Again, it kind of comes back to legal standpoint. But I think that that's another thing that kind of, you know, once we go through the training process and these lifeguards sit through our training with, you know, the risk manager, they're like, oh gosh, I mean, I'm not allowed to have any fun here. I have to wear sunscreen all the time, which we all know that we lied on those sunscreen logs. But there are so many policies and red tape that you have to go through, and it kind of keeps it from being fun. So I do think that there are some policies we can probably lighten up on a little bit. Again, lifeguarding is a very serious position. You know, it's life or death when you're up in that chair. So you can't necessarily let too many things go. I would never let a lifeguard get in a chair with their cell phone. I've caught lifeguards with their cell phones, and that's a big no-no. But okay, can we give them a little grace? You know, can we let them take a selfie during their break? You know, there's just certain things that I do think that we can be a little bit more relaxed about and not be so hard on them.
Totally agree. And I wonder what it might be like if you told your lifeguards to take selfies and to post it on Instagram, you know, if they wanted to do that. And like, you're building that referral program automatically, right? Like, if they're able to share their stories on Instagram, more people are going to be intrigued by that, and they could possibly get more people to apply for your jobs.
Very good point. I really like that. Like, yes, they should be taking selfies at work, because then they're advertising for us. So like, all right, instead of being old, you know, curmudgeons about it, like, let's let people take those selfies. Let's let them do a little TikTok or whatever on the pool deck while they're down, like, whatever. I don't really even understand TikTok, but let's let them do some of this stuff while they're at the pool, because then they recruit staff for the next summer. You know, again, within safe boundaries, right. You know, not letting someone do anything crazy, but I mean, I think that I think it's time to revisit our policies and maybe see, you know, especially after 2020, life changed completely. So let's take a look at those policies again and see what we can maybe loosen up a little bit on and change and make it so that people aren't having to go through so much red tape to come work for us.
Exactly. Okay. And on that same note, we're going to go to the last point here, the last strategy that we've kind of developed, which is really around sharing your values and your culture often, because you have the power to create your own culture. We've talked a lot. Marissa had a great episode with Jason Elizalde about workplace culture. But I think it's incredibly important. And this is one of the things that people come back for every single year. And so knowing those values, especially around being inclusive, being an equal opportunity employer, making sure that there's equal access for all. Those are the things that are certainly an expectation from those of a younger generation. And they want to know. And they also want to know that you are eco-friendly, that you have these values. And it's like, how do you explain that in a way that takes it from more than just lip service and more than just, you know, a poster on the wall, and you actually live them out? So maybe you create some sort of incentive program when you see people living out those values. Whatever it is, find a way for people to be proud to work there. And I think that that would really go a long way with retaining employees.
So much yes. So when all of this makes me like reflect back to when I was a lifeguard and how really the culture as a lifeguard set the bar for me and the future of my career in parks and recreation. And the culture was so much different from what was happening at the top. We had no idea all of the nitty-gritty budget issues, policies, lawsuits, all of that stuff. I mean, now that I'm further towards the top and I hear the behind the scenes, I think back to myself, I as a lifeguard had no idea that all of that was going on because the aquatics managers did such a great job of creating this like atmosphere, this world, this amazing place to work. And like I said, when we were on the clock and there and the public was there, we were on. But during Friday morning in services, so much fun. We would play games. We would do, obviously practice our skills. One of our aquatics managers over the PA system would play the percolator while we rotated. So everyone would dance and just have a great time. And again, like being proud of where you work, we had plenty of apparel. We had plenty of t-shirts and sweatpants and windbreakers and our guard suits. We were so proud to work for the Wheeling Park District and to strut our stuff around town wearing our lifeguarding uniforms and to go to school wearing our lifeguarding hoodies and sweatpants and things like that. There was just so much a sense of pride that came with it. And again, then it continued to recruit people. You know, I know that my younger sister is 2.5, almost 3 years younger than me. And we were able to reach even her friends to come lifeguard because, you know, we were kind of the cooler, older classmen walking around the school with our lifeguarding stuff on. So there is such a culture that you can create. You can make it so much fun. Like I said, lifeguarding is the real deal. It's very serious. I think it's one of the most underappreciated positions within a park district or within a municipality, but it can also be so much fun. Like I said, we would rotate to the percolator, you know, during in-service trainings. We made sure to, if you were the closing shift and you had to clean, they would play fun music for us. It wasn't just 101.9 The Mix, which if you live here in the Chicago area, you know that it's like, it's the most wholesome, clean radio station you can possibly get. They would put on like B96 for us, which is a not so clean radio station here in the Chicago area. They would make it fun. They would order us pizzas. They would, hey, everyone go into the concession stand and grab an ice cream. Just little things like that, that cost your agency very little, but it boosts morale. It gets everyone excited. Everyone wants to be there. And really many of those people that I lifeguarded with are people that I would have never hung out with outside of school, but then you find yourself hanging out with them on the weekends and outside of work. So I truly looked forward to going to work every shift. I would work 40 hours a week during the summer, you know, high school through college, because I truly, it wasn't about the $8 an hour I was making. I was working a couple other jobs, you know, at one summer I was working 3 jobs to supplement, not making very much money as a lifeguard, but I loved working there and it was my top priority and it was the best place to work. And like I said, I think that built the foundation for my expectation of culture at an agency, because then when I went on to the Arlington Heights Park District, a very similar culture. But then when I went to other districts, I saw not necessarily the same culture. So have some fun with those lifeguards. Like we were just kind of talking about policies. It's okay to have fun. It's okay to goof around with them and relate and, you know, just reminisce and, you know, kind of sometimes be the old lady, but have fun.
Absolutely. We need more fun in our field. And we especially need the youngest leaders and employees that we have to know that this field has a lot of opportunity and it can be fun and it can be rewarding. So that wraps up our 7 tips about how to recruit employees this summer. I know it's coming a little bit late, close to Memorial Day. You guys probably are figuring this out, but we still see so many people struggling with it. So we hope that this was at least timely for some of our listeners out there. And we would love to continue the conversation. We are over on Instagram. You'll see Marissa hop on the stories all the time. You can go talk with her. You know, tell us what you thought about the episode. Tell us what you thought. You can also connect with us on LinkedIn as well. We're both there as well. We'd love to hear from you. So thanks so much for listening. Until next time, let's talk Parks.
Bye.
Bye.